It's time to get wild with SC Wild. Everything hunting and fishing from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources and your host, Phil Kornblut. SC Wild on Sports Talk on the South Carolina Radio Network.
It is such a pleasure to have back in the studio as he traveled through the rain, the ice, the snow to get to us.
Another snow day, yes.
The captain, Billy Downer. I was going to say Debbie Downer, but the captain, Billy Downer.
You're on a roll.
You're
tonight.
No Debbie Downer.
You're on a roll tonight.
It's good to see you.
It's great.
Last time
you
were snowed in, you couldn't get to us.
Yes, I was. 4 to 5 inches at the house there in Sumter. And
how about this time?
This time, looks like a little wet ground maybe at the most.
That's good.
So people got some. They got some good snow up toward Newberry, Lawrence.
So this storm, unlike the last one, started like it normally does in our state, from the upstate down instead of from the low country.
My daughter
up.
Called. Clemson had 2 inches. They were having a blast up there. Lawrence had snow. They were making snowmen there, and or snow women, whichever one. And we went,
snow
and then
people.
Over there to York County, they had about probably 3 or 4 inches, looks like. So,
and Columbia got nothing.
And Columbia got, well, we got a little bit of snow.
I saw about 15 minutes of snow at my house.
But it didn't stick, or so no. That's a good thing. And
your
real cold temperatures tonight, there are some delays. Government officers in Columbia are delayed 2 hours tomorrow just because of the
good
fear of the wet
the longer
ground.
We can keep the politicians out of town.
Well, it's that black ice, Corn.
That's
black
correct.
Ice.
We're fear for the roads being frozen, dangerous mm-hmm. to the public, driving into Columbia. So.
Right.
It's because we don't have sand here, and we don't have pre-treatment of roads or anything like that here. Do we?
Correct. You remember what the guy said? Remember what the Charleston guy said about the airport? Did you see the interview he had?
No, I didn't. What he
like
said?
The seventh day the airport was closed or something. Nut. He said, this is not Detroit. He
yeah,
said, we're not
yeah.
used to this.
He probably said, have no de-icing stuff.
We said, we do not have scrape blades, none of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Well, what's happening in the great outdoors? It looks like waterfowl season is still moving forward.
Waterfowl season still going on. Activity is slow. It's funny to say it's slow because it's cold, but the last couple, 2 weeks, extremely low temperatures, down in the teens, down below the teens, down into single digits, froze a lot of the water in impoundments and other areas, and birds moved out. So it's been slow. Some of the backwater areas still have water now for wood ducks. Again, that's a popular duck here in South Carolina for most of the public to be able to access. It's probably our number one duck in the bag because it's the most plentiful in our state. But again, slowed down a little bit with cold weather. It's warmed up again, so we do have water, not ice. Tonight will be a cold night. But for the most part, water's open back up again. Our Category 1 areas, we keep talking about those, but I like to try to highlight those because folks kind of want to know what's going on the coast. Category 1 areas have continued to see high success rates. Again, if you're not taking part in our waterfowl drawings, you should be. It's $20 a year to put in. Usually after about 3 years, you'll get drawn. It's worth every penny, so put into that around October. Be looking for that. We'll remind you on the show here. But some of the great areas on the coast, top area for this past week was Cedar Island at the Santee Coastal Reserve with an average of 5.8 ducks per man. Pretty much everybody got their limits, what that means. The top duck in the bag was American Widgeon or Ball Pate. A very close second was Gadwall with Blue Wing Teal in a distant third. Our runner-up area for the week was Bear Island East with an average of 5.3 ducks per man. The top duck of the day there was Gadwall. Again, Gadwall high in the limit this year. Green Wing Teal was a distant second there, with a Northern Shoveler, or the old Spoonie, in third. The top pintail hole for the week, just for those waterfowlers out there that want to know where the pintails are, the top pintail hole for the week was Murphy Island at Santee Coastal
Reserve. What makes the pintail most desirable?
The pintail is just kind of that tuxedo mallard, they call him.
Hmm.
Just a pretty duck. They are a favorite among waterfowlers because they're not that plentiful.
Hmm.
It's a special occasion to be able to shoot a pintail. Some people on the coast are used to seeing lots of pintails, but the average waterfowler does not see a pintail every day.
Hmm.
So pintails are just kind of that special duck for folks.
And how do you end up with a point something of a duck?
Again, that's averaging, Phil. When you have 11 hunters and maybe 10 of them shot the limit,
they didn't
but
do.
One did not. You had one bad shot in the
or
crowd, like you.
Maybe you only found part of the duck.
No, it has nothing to do with part
you
of the duck.
They didn't teach simple division at Lotta.
I know. He has a hard time every time I say point something ducks per man. He's like, wait a minute.
It just sounds like
how does
you
point
picked
three
up
ducks?
A piece of the duck
no.
instead of the whole duck. All right,
that's
what's next?
Well, you know, after the segment, we're going to talk about night hunting for coyotes in our last segment. But, you know, something I wanted to bring up here today as well. We had came on Actually had a story come up today that I saw. It's been in the news twice. Ended up being a friend of mine I knew, but he was telling a story about quail hunting, which is something of reference to all hunters to think about, a story that happened to him. It's not a good story. In fact, that he went on a quail hunt with some friends, somebody he didn't know as well, and a guy ended up swinging out of his zone of fire. We talk about zone of fire. We'll talk about it in a minute. But swung out of his zone of fire, and he got shot.
Ooh.
Ended up getting pellets in the face. And was just talking about the experience from the standpoint for him. He'd never been in a situation where he'd been hunting with someone where someone would actually swing on him.
Explain that when you mean swing on
zone
him.
Of fire. So yeah. Zone of fire. When you're hunting doves or any other birds, you're going to sit in the field. Typically, when we teach classes on hunter education, we tell folks all the time, when you get in a dove field, look around, you see where everyone else is at, and determine where your zone of fire or the area in which you can safely shoot.
Kind of like a cutting circle.
Exactly.
Almost.
Like us at the table here, we'd be shooting out.
Right.
My zone of fire is out this way, yours is that way, Phil's that way. So you basically cut the pie, and this is your area you can shoot in.
Going basically behind us, so that you're not shooting towards anybody.
So in the, you always shoot away from other people.
Right.
When you're quail hunting, typically you walk forward, or if you're pheasant hunting, things like that, or any type of jump shooting, you're hunting in a line, you may have one, two, three hunters walking in a line. The guy in the middle is shooting in the middle, the guy to the left shoots to the left, the guy on the right obviously shoots to the right.
Away from the group.
You don't want the guy on the right shooting all the way to the left across the guy in the middle, which is what happens when people get fixated on the bird. They get excited. They follow the bird with the gun. They forget about where they're shooting, and they shoot out of their zone of fire. So it's something we talk about a lot in hunter education classes. In this particular story, he was hunting with someone he didn't know, never met before. And that is neither here nor there, except for the fact that a lot of times hunters like to be with people they know. When I hunt, I like to know who
I'm hunting. Is that because you know their tendencies?
Exactly. You know what they know. You know that they know what they're doing.
Yeah. You hope that they also know the rules about zone of fire.
Exactly. So when you're someone that you haven't hunted before, you may expect them to know the rules, and they may not. In this case, they had a couple of instances where quail had come back and flown, which a lot of times when you're hunting quail and you push the quail up, they'll fly straight back at you. So there's no shot. There's opportunities in hunting that there's times in hunting when you just don't have a shot. It's not worth taking a bad shot. So we teach that all the time in hunter education. In this particular story, they had a couple of instances where they pushed the birds up, they came back at them so they couldn't shoot, and the guy got frustrated and said, hey, you need to shoot these birds. And to the next one, the birds got up, the guy got excited, said, I'm going to shoot this bird. And he focused on it, swung around and pulled the trigger and shot this guy over to the left and hit him in the face and upper torso.
Wow.
He ended up going to the hospital. You know, he ended up on the ground, wake up, and he's like, ears ringing, and he feels blood on his face. And end of the day, it was not a very attractive story, but it was a lesson to be learned in that you always watch who you're hunting with. You always watch for your zone of fire. Know who you're hunting with. It's worth going over the rules every time you go out to make sure everybody understands it.
Yes.
And don't get caught up in the excitement to make a mistake. This story happened probably 20 years ago, but he was just talking about it in a story just recently. A lot of folks thought it just happened, but it had not. It actually happened back in the late 90s. But it was a good friend of mine. When I saw who wrote the story, I was like, wow, I know him. I called him up, and he started telling me the story again. But it's attracted a lot of attention in the last week because people start thinking about zone of fire and why don't people know that. Then they start talking about reporting accidents. You know, I'm in hunter education. I have to review in my office all the hunting accidents that get reported in the state.
Are you finding accidents are up, down, about
no,
the same?
No, they're not. In fact, most of them mostly were down on tree stand accidents, which is great this past year. But we're always going to have that moment. There's always going to be times when people have a lapse in judgment. And most of the time, it's not fatal. But when you're talking with guns, you don't want there to be any type of incident because there's too much of a tendency for with an accident with a gun, someone could get seriously injured.
Sure. And when you don't see the accident reports and stuff like that, people lull themselves into a false insecurity and might let their inhibitions down a little bit.
Yeah. So for us, you know, looking at hunting accident reports from year to year gives us tendencies of where we are. Are people being safe? Are we teaching what we need to teach in hunter education? And this just brought up another instance of talking about zone of fire and knowing where knowing where you're going to shoot when you go on a hunting trip. Talk to that guy if you're in a duck blind. Make sure you know the guy beside you, he shoots to the left, you shoot to the right, if he's on your left, and you don't shoot across him. No matter what, no matter if it's that pintail you've been waiting on, you don't take a bad shot. You don't lower your gun and shoot too low in a dove field as well, where you might, again, scatter shot on somebody that could sting them or injure them.
Okay, our phone number, 800-956-7266. We have the captain, Billy Downer, in SC Wild. Question or comment, fire away at the captain. Going to come back and talk about coyotes right here on SC Wild.
It's time to get wild with SC Wild. Everything hunting and fishing from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources and your host, Phil Kornblut. SC Wild on Sports Talk on the South Carolina Radio Network.
Starring, of course, the captain, Billy Downer. No doubt, without question, the most popular member of DNR in South Carolina. Are you well known as you walk around your office?
This show has
traveled through the state.
Surged
is that
forward.
The captain, Billy Downer?
There it is.
Of Sports Talk SC
yes,
Wild fame?
Yes,
I'm
yes.
sure. Probably hard to keep people from lining up from autographs and things like that. Huh? Huh? Showing off your gun. You like to show off your gun.
Did we have a call?
Let's go to Tom in Charleston with us here on SC Wild. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Phil. How you doing?
Good.
Good. I'm glad to hear from y'all. And Mr. Downer, I appreciate you taking our calls and everything about wildlife because I've been in South Carolina doing it for a long time.
Well, we're glad to hear from you. What's up?
Yeah, I just want to talk about the new rules and everything. And I don't want to take away from fowl hunting and everything. But I want to go back to deer hunting. And I just saw some issues we had this year on the new tags and the new procedure we have and everything. And the main thing is when and unfortunately, we have so many people filtrating our country, our state, on deer hunting, on dog hunting, which I love the dog hunt, which our dogs are bred and raised and bred and do everything on dog hunting. But when we have tags and we out here dog hunting, and we have game wardens come up to us and they say, "Where are your tags?" And I said, "Oh, I have them in my vehicle, which is about 20 feet from me." And they said, "Well, you have to have the tags on you." And then we get fined for not having the tags on you. That's an issue I had because I have the tags and within my ring, but we got fined for it.
Right. So you're saying you actually got
a
ticket.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're saying you actually got a ticket for not having the tags on your person.
Well, and that's just it. I did not get a ticket.
Okay.
But several of my members of my club that I joined, I'm in Charleston, and I went all the way to the upstate because I love dog hunting. And some of the members got tickets because they did not have the tickets on them when the game warden approached them. And the problem is, I mean, I carried mine on me after they got tickets, but by the time I shot the buck or doe or whatever I had, you couldn't read the tag because I sweated so much I all stuck together.
Right, right. Now, certainly I will speak to that for just a minute. Number one, this was the first year of the tagging philosophy in South Carolina and the new law. It has been a challenge getting people to understand the new law a little bit. And I say a challenge, it really wasn't just for us as South Carolinians. All of us have grown up hunting deer, not having to tag anything. Then you had the doe, you know, except for does, and now all of a sudden with bucks. It's something you've got to kind of relearn the process a little bit. I will say this is a tag process, and the tags you mentioned getting stuck together, that is a problem that has been brought to everyone's attention. I know that the licensing section is working on that for next year because you're not the only person that's talked about that. Plenty of people take their tags, they put them on their tash or up in their visor, and the sun would heat them up, and they would stick together, and they were unlegible and had to reorder tags or get replacement tags. So that absolutely was a problem that I know we're dealing with. As to the tags on your person, that's something we've got to walk through together a little bit from an enforcement standpoint, and hunters together work together a little bit on that, because the law actually does state that you're supposed to have them with you. And when it says with you, it does mean on your person. But I understand your point. You know, who's going to have this big sheet of tags folded up in your pocket? And so that's an issue to deal with, and I agree with you on that. But it's something we need to look at moving forward to next season. I think for the most part, though, this season went through without too many hiccups for a state that never had tags before to go through a first tagging year. I went to the processor many times taking deer of my own, and you're always, as an officer, you're looking around. It's just something I can't help, second nature, looking to see if all the deer are tagged, and I didn't expect it. But most of the deer, I never – in fact, this year, unusual because in the past when we didn't require tagging, I always would end up with somebody with a doe that wasn't tagged. This year I never saw a problem. Everybody's deer were tagged, so I was pleasantly surprised. So I hate that you may have had a bad experience. I think moving forward we'll work through the issue you spoke about specifically with the tags being stuck together. And I think as officers and hunters together, we can work through that possession issue with the licenses as well. So thanks for your comments and bringing that up. And we'll continue to work together toward that resolution come next August when we face the second deer season in tags.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for the phone call. Let's get to the other major point of the night you wanted to talk about, and that is coyotes and night hunting.
Yep. You know, deer season's over. A lot of folks this time of year are looking for something else. And particularly if they are a big deer hunter and deer clubs, they don't like coyotes. Nobody seems to like coyotes. Coyotes are on everybody's hit list because coyotes, number one, they have been proven to prey on fawn, on young deer to some degree.
Is there anything positive about a coyote?
Well, they're not supposed to be here. There's the problem.
Yeah.
Coyotes are a Midwestern animal. They're supposed to be in the prairies. They're not supposed to be here.
Kind of like me.
But
well yet, put.
Wow. Second. Wow. Tough crowd.
Anyway, go ahead.
But so they're not supposed to be here, but yet they've come from migration. They were brought illegally brought in as well.
So was I.
A combination of reasons why they ended up here in South Carolina.
How many years ago?
The 1970 was the first actual sighting of a coyote. Mm-hmm. They migrated across the Mississippi here. 1989, after Hugo, there was an explosion of coyote sightings in the state relative to a lot of fox hunting pens where they had been brought in illegally. Mm-hmm. Not anything against fox hunting, but there were a lot of instances where people had brought in coyotes illegally to run with dogs. And when Hugo came through, hurricane, blew down a lot of fences. All of a sudden, there's a lot of coyotes popping up in places. So a lot of different reasons why coyotes are here. Natural migration and illegal importation. But they're here now.
Okay.
They have an impact on deer population to some degree. That's been proven to some degree. I think deer, for the most part now, are kind of climbing out of that. You give any animal time to adapt to a change, they're going to overcome it. You know, it's never been proven that they are any kind of impact on turkeys. A lot of people think that. They may take a turkey here or there, but they're not a major impact. But deer certainly. So a lot of people don't like coyotes. Coyotes also in suburban environments have been proven to take cats. So a lot of people don't like, you know, coyotes are an adaptive animal. They can live right outside of Charleston. They live right in Mount Pleasant, right in the town of Mount Pleasant. They live in New York City outskirts. I mean, everywhere. These coyotes are adaptive animals. They can live on a lot of areas. And they learn to feed on different animals other than the
mice and
voles.
Does the weather affect them, the cold? Do they go away during the cold?
No, they don't. They can handle it. Think about the Midwest, how cold it gets out there.
Yeah. Very, very bad.
But again, so in response to people wanting to control coyotes better in South Carolina, the General Assembly passed a budget proviso that included a coyote tagging reward program. Basically, a coyote harvest incentive program was created back in 2016 by our General Assembly. It's continued this year for the second year. Last year we tagged, if you remember, 16 coyotes. A lot of questions about that. Our biologists went out with the help of some trappers. They went out and trapped 4 coyotes, or 16 coyotes, and released them in the four game zones. Basically 4 coyotes in each game zone. People ask, well, what coyote they trap? Did they do any kind of surgery or anything? No, they're males. They weren't sterilized. They were male coyotes, and they were released. Last year we had 8 coyotes taken. This year, 16 more have been released, and only 2 have been taken. So there's 22 still out there with tags. They have ear tags and tags and specific contact information. Anyone who takes one of these tagged coyotes as an incentive and saves the carcass and reports to DNR receives a complimentary lifetime hunting license. So it's an incentive to get folks to go out and coyote hunt to control the population.
Something that needs to be done.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, Captain, final thoughts?
As always, enjoy being here. But as our story said before, remember, when you hunt with others, in a blind, in the field, watch your muzzle, know the direction you're supposed to shoot, and shoot in your zone of fire.
Good advice. And be safe in the snow and the ice. Watch your step. And we thank you, sir. We'll see you back here in a couple of weeks. Thank you, Will. Thank you, Brian. SC Wild on Sports Talk. Have a great night, everybody. See you tomorrow night.